Hey there, Sports History fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
In this episode of the podcast, we dive deep into the career of an early NFL quarterback and a couple all-pro centers. Their stories are coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to your football history headlines as we focus in on March 18th here in the Pigpen today. And we're happy to say there's a little bit of a headline today, and it happened from March 18th, 1970. And it's the news is the NFL selected Wilson as its official football. Yeah, Wilson Athletic Company as their official football for the NFL. And the NFL also chose to use the scoreboard clock as the official timepiece for games. That's very interesting, too. Prior to that, they did it on a field clock, and one of the officials would hold a watch or a clock, and that was the official timepiece. And you didn't always know how much time was left in a quarter or a half, and the coaches had to get information right from the officials. And that's sort of what started the two-minute warning, before the end of a half. The officials would say, hey, there's 2 minutes left in a half. You'll still see that at some of the lower-level games, like when your children play when they're very young and they're at a field that doesn't have a scoreboard or a clock on the field. The officials will keep the timepiece on there, and they'll give some of them will be kind. They'll give a four-minute warning at the end of the half and a two-minute warning at the end of the half. That way you don't have to keep barking out how much time's left to both sidelines, but we want to make it fair to everybody. So having that scoreboard be the official timepiece, that is a great thing, and it passed down to many other levels of football too when that happened. Now, I want to tell you a little story, and I want you to picture yourself at a 1920s era famous Columbus, Ohio Horseshoe Football Stadium with 90,000 other onlookers. The game you're witnessing is a heated rivalry, even then, with the Ohio State Buckeyes and the University of Michigan Wolverines in an important game with the Big Ten Conference Championship in the balance. Now, it's early in the game. A mere 12 minutes have gone by. But you look up at the scoreboard, and the Michigan 11 are trailing Ohio State by 10 points. With that in mind, Michigan's head coach, Fielding Yost, unsheathes his secret weapon, the forward pass, using Benny Friedman and left end Benny Oosterbaum and left halfback Lewis Gilbert. It was an aerial assault that's not been seen before at that time, as quarterback Friedman shocked the Buckeye defenders with perfect strikes to his teammate Benny Oosterbaum, while he also caught passes himself, Friedman did, from Gilbert. It was Friedman scrambling till he got in trouble, and then launching the ball in Oosterbaum's direction, who would sometimes make a circus-like grab. But suddenly that drive to get back in a game looked as though it had stalled. Therefore, Gilbert was a holder, Friedman was in position to kick, and they dropped back for that field goal attempt. Lewis Gilbert dropped on one knee and as though to hold the ball for the place kick, but when the ball was snapped, instead he moved out of the way, and Friedman caught it, stepped back, and promptly fired a swift flat pass to Oosterbaum, who was free, wide open, behind the Ohio State goalpost. With Friedman's extra point kick, the lead was cut to 3. The Buckeyes' next drive stalled, and they were forced to punt with only a minute left before the half was over. A split-second decision would be pivotal as the first half was closing. Gilbert again took his position on one knee, ready to field the snap, but Friedman called it off and took the snap directly so as he could take the ball, and he drop-kicked it from 43 yards out, right through the uprights. Michigan had tied the score at the half. The teams came out in the second half, but neither defense would give ground. As a matter of fact, the blue defense did one better as they recovered a muff punt deep inside OSU territory. The Buckeyes put up a fight, but on fourth down, after shedding a couple red jersey tackles, Benny Freeman plunged over the goal line. Michigan 17, Ohio State 10. What happened next would feel like a real gut punch. Ohio State got the ball. They moved down the field with short passes and finally punctuated by a Buckeye rush for a score. With the game clock all but expired, there came an all-important point after a try. Just 1 point separating the teams. The snap went down. Foot hit ball with a thud of leather on leather. Pigskin rose up in the air on a direct line straight down the middle and sailed between the pipes. But it was 2 feet under the crossbar. The Wolverines prevailed in a 17-16 thriller in Ohio, and then a week later knocked off the University of Minnesota by the score of 7-6 to capture the Big Ten crown. We credit the Bentley UMich site for posting a next day report from that 1926 game that we could take the facts from for the story. We have a link to their site on our website, pigskindispatch.com, for this March 18th post. Benny Freedman was born March 18th, 1905 in Cleveland, Ohio, and he played as a standout quarterback from 1924 to 1927 for the Michigan Wolverines per the National Football Foundation. And Benny was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1951. In 1927, as a rookie on the Cleveland Bulldogs, Benny was selected as the All-NFL player as he threw for an almost unheard of 11 touchdown passes. Remember, it's 1927. The Pro Football Hall of Fame says that the next season with the Detroit Wolverines, Benny did it again, reaching All-NFL status, and then he did it two more times the next preceding seasons with the New York Giants uniform on. What a start to a professional career, to be on three different teams and to be considered the top player at your position in the NFL. He ran, he kicked, and he passed as well as anyone in the league. Therefore, the Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined the great quarterback Benny Freedman in the year 2005. Benny Freedman, what a great player, NFL and college career. We talked a lot about his college career in one game, but it was just an outstanding story we wanted to share with you. But we also have some other birthdays on this March 18th, and another one that took place in 1905. This time, Aurora, Illinois. The Navy two-way tackle from the mid-1920s, Frank Wickhurst, was credited with his birth date on that date. The NFF shares a great story also from the 1926 season. Late in a game, Army led 21-14 and threatened to destroy Navy's bid for an unbeaten season. Navy had the ball on its own 30-yard line, and time was running out on the middies. Frank Wickhurst, the Navy captain, huddled his team and spoke. "Hey, do you guys see that goal line down there?" he said, pointing beyond the Army defense. "We are going to cross it, and we're not going to lose the ball until we put it across." A few moments later, Alan Shapley scored for the midshipmen, and Hall of Famer Tom Hamilton kicked the conversion point to provide a 21-all tie and preserve Navy's undefeated status. The inspirational Wickhurst was honored as an All-American that season, and he could have played out differently for Navy and Frank, though, because as a freshman, Frank played on the line of Illinois with Red Grange in the backfield. An appointment to the Naval Academy was the catalyst of change for both teams, because after his military service, Wickhurst served as the head coach of the football at the University of California. March 18th, 1910, Pocahontas, Arkansas, where Schoonhover, the two-way end at Arkansas, and the first official All-American football player in the Southwest Conference, as well as the first Arkansas athlete to be elected into the National Football Foundation's Hall of Fame in 1967. In 1929, Schoonhover did not miss a second of play during a 9-game schedule and earned All-American selection per his bio on the NFF website. In those contests, he hauled in 7 touchdown passes and scored 42 points as his Razorbacks posted a 7-2 mark. Ware was a playmaker, as evidenced against Texas A&M, where Schoonhover snatched a couple of receptions to set up 2 Razorback TDs and then blocked an extra point to preserve Arkansas's 14-13 triumph. Later in the year, versus Sanitary, Ware picked off 5 passes, returning one of those 92 yards for a touchdown. What an exciting player he must have been to watch. We have another birthday, March 18th, 1919. Frank Gunnar Gatzke, the center from Auburn, who anchored the Cleveland Browns offensive line during the championship years of the late 40s in the AAFC and in the early 1950s for the Browns in the NFL. That's when he was born. According to the ProFootballHOF.com website, he played in 11 championship games in the 12 seasons he participated at the pro level. He won 8 of them on the teams he was on. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Gunnar Gatzke in 1985. Can you imagine that, having a 12-year career and you play in the championship game 11 of those 12 years? Now, four of them were in the AAFC, but the Browns won all 4 AAFC championships. And when they joined the NFL, they were pretty successful and won a couple championships there too, and played in a bunch, and were a very competitive team, even though the AFC was considered to be an inferior league. But head coach Paul Brown had other things in mind. He had some great players, you know, Otto Graham and Gunnar Gatzke among them. March 18th, 1928, Waco, Texas. Rice University's end, James Froggy Williams, earned his nickname by being so slippery for those opposing tacklers. James set a school record as an all-time leading scorer by crossing the goal line stripe 13 times and kicking 75 extra points, and even a field goal, for a total of 156 career points. In 1949, Froggy was chosen as a consensus All-American selection. Williams just had a knack of having his best game against a rival Texas, when he had 2 TDs, scored 7 extra points in his career against the Longhorns. But the stunner was his only career successful field goal, which lifted the Owls to a 17-15 victory over Texas. James Williams was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1965. March 18, 1952. Mike Webster was the anchor of the Pittsburgh Steelers for 15 seasons, winning 4 Super Bowls, and he was born on that day in 1952. The fifth-round pick in the 1974 NFL draft was durable, as he played 10 straight seasons without missing a snap on offense. Webster was an All-Pro in 7 seasons, therefore earning Pro Bowl slots in 9 different years. Mike completed his career by playing 2 additional years in the NFL with the KC Chiefs. Mike Webster was enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1997. In our final birthday Hall of Famer, his birthday took place on March 18, 1961, in Wyoming County, West Virginia. The 1981 All-American running back of the Penn State Nittany Lions, Kurt Warner, Kurt with a C, claimed his birthday. When Kurt's college career was complete, the NFF says he had records galore, including 11 season, 14 bowl, and 42 school records. Warner was named the most outstanding offensive player in 2 different Fiesta Bowls he played in, and Kurt also led the Nittany Lions to the 1982 National Championship with their Sugar Bowl victory. He set records for career rushing yardage with 3,398, career all-purpose yards of 4,982, and 100-yard rushing games with 18 in his career. Warner is also second all-time in career kickoff return average of 28.8 yards per return, tallying 922 yards and 3 touchdowns on 32 returns. Kurt Warner became the College Football Hall of Fame inductee in 2009, and he had a nice career in the NFL too, when he earned All-Pro distinction 4 different times with the Seattle Seahawks as their running back for 7 seasons. Warner also played 1 final year with the Rams. Now, don't be confused with Kurt Warner, the quarterback. That's Kurt with a K, that played for, you know, the Rams and the Arizona Cardinals and the Giants for a little bit. This is Kurt Warner, the running back with a C, that played for Penn State and the Seattle Seahawks, and 1 year with the Rams also. Well, we want to thank you once again for joining us for your football history headlines for this March 18th, and we hope that you'll join us tomorrow. Great ways to do it. You can subscribe to our podcast by hitting the follow button on your podcast player, or you can email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com for anything. But if you want to get on our email list, just tell us, you know, write that email, pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and tell us you want to be on our email list, and you'll get an email every single morning at about 6:45 Eastern time, and it has our podcast on it too, as well as our blogs, and you'll know everything that's going on with the Pigskin Dispatch. You can also check us out at the Sports History Network, where we are one of 20-some different podcasts on sports history on sportshistorynetwork.com. And you'll really enjoy it because there are some really exciting podcasts talking about all kinds of sports from all around the world, all eras of time, both new and old. And you will just be thrilled with the hosts and the guests that are on there, because there's some great personalities on there. So until tomorrow, everybody, have a great Gridiron Day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.